Ron Smith Enterprises presents episode 11 of Topics in Endurance Sports. I'm your host, Tim. Today is November 20th, 2017. It's a Monday, just a few days before Thanksgiving. You can find out more about me at my website at runsmith.net. Please go there for email, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all that jazz. I'm going to get right into the show pretty much today. Not too much of an introduction. A little bit about some previous things. I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but if you listen to the East Coast Trail and Ultra podcast, and you go back to episode 39, which was back in June, about they actually interviewed me. It's kind of a joke, I guess. I just kind of know the Ryan Pluckelman. No real reason, just because I've bugged him enough, I guess. And he knew I was running Western States. So he interviewed me about running Western States. And if you know anything about their podcast, it's a very silly, funny, not safe for work type podcast. And the whole interview with me, which was about 15 minutes, turned into pretty much a comedy gag. So you might want to go check that out. A lot of people said it was a pretty funny show. So go check that out. Another thing, if you listen to that podcast and a number of other ones, for example, 10 Junk Miles, Ultra Runner Podcast, I think Heartland Podcast, and one or two others, a couple of months ago, you may have heard them do a Synchrocast. And that was in 1 week, they all podcasted about the same topic. And the topic I believe they chose was your perfect race or your perfect race day. What's funny about that is I claim 100% credit for that happening. In fact, I am 100% of the reason that happened. So how I started it was that I sent a Facebook message to about 10 different ultra running podcasters, and I had a suggestion. So my suggestion actually was that we should try to all meet somewhere and have kind of a camp. It could be at a race or it could be not at a race, but we'd have like a podcasting camp of sorts where podcasters would meet. We'd all get in a big room and have tables. And along with that, we would have vendors of sorts. We would have elite runners come and anyone else, coaches, all types of people come and be like this ultra running camp. We might even, if we were lucky enough, have it in a cool spot and even stage a race there, or at least some group runs of sorts. So I just thought that was an interesting idea. I got it from somewhere else, and I messaged all these podcasters. So I initiated this whole thing, and it was really hilarious kind of what happened, because at first they were like, that's a cool idea. But then everyone kind of started thinking about the logistics of all that and kind of a big thing to try to do. And it went through a number of iterations, evolved over time into different ideas and different ideas and different ideas. And eventually it became the Synchrocast. And they just decided, let's all do a podcast on the same theme on the same week, and we'll kind of cross promote each other. So that is how that happened. And if you'll notice, I actually did not participate in it. That wasn't really what I was interested in. I don't know, I'm just strange. But it was a cool idea that they had. Their idea was obviously much smarter because it was much easier to do. But anyway, if you did hear that, that was my doing. Oh, a Southeastern Trail Runner podcast. Those guys were also in it as well. But anyway, I'm the one that started that, and I guess I'm kind of proud that it took off and became something that's kind of neat. But anyway, that was me. All right, what are today's topics? Let's get right into it. The first topic, there are two topics. The first is a review of a race I did called the 24-Hour Run for Dreams. Actually, it's the 24-Hour and 12-Hour. And the second topic is a book review. I read a book. I'm going to review it. It's called Your Best Stride by Jonathan Beverly. Now, start with the race. Here's the bad thing. It is November 20th. I did this race on August 5th. So I'm still way, way, way behind. That's basically 3.5 months ago that I did this race. in a way, it doesn't matter. This podcast doesn't have to be super timely. And in fact, the review of this will probably be more interesting to people doing it in the future anyway. So maybe people next summer would listen to this to get some ideas about the race. So it doesn't really bother me that things are late. It's just that I'm backlogged. I have two other races after this to review. So that's the only reason I wish I was a little quicker on things. But evidently, I guess I'm busy. So this race, like I said, was done Saturday, August 5th, 2017. There was a 24-hour edition and a 12-hour edition. And I did the 12-hour version of it. I did not do the 24-hour. So let's get into this race. The race director is Tommy Kendall, and I'll have an interview with him coming up. The location was Red Orchard Park in Shelbyville, Kentucky, which is rather close to Louisville. It's either east or west of it, just, I don't know, 20 miles or something, roughly like that. And the race course itself was a two-mile loop, and I mean two as in 2.0-mile loop, very, very close, very well-measured loop. And you would just run it as many times as you can. So, obviously, if you're running for 12 hours, you just run this two-hour loop for 12 hours, or you run it for 24 hours. It started at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, August 5th. What he did for me, I was in the 12-hour version. Starting at hour 11, he made a little out and back. It was 0.25 miles out and 0.25 miles back. That way, you wouldn't get caught mid-loop and not get credit for it. So starting at hour 11, you could run out 0.25, run back 0.25, and get a credit for a half a mile. So you could do half-mile increments starting at hour 11. I'm assuming he did that at hour 23 as well for the 24-hour people, but I wasn't there for that. But I would think he did that. The loop itself was all either dirt trails. So you started off by going into some woods. Maybe this took a total of 3/4 of a mile or something. You were in the woods on kind of single track, and then you came out and you were running in this park proper on grass, and they even mowed a path right on the grass for you to run on. And it's funny, you'll hear us talk about the hill, okay? So at first, when I walked it the night before, and I said, wow, this thing's totally flat. And, you know, the first lap you run, it seems totally flat. But this hill, which was kind of in this wooded section, kind of the section where it transitions from wood to grass, this hill just kept growing and growing and growing. So you'll hear me and the race director joking about this, about how this hill, which seemed like nothing at first, just got bigger and bigger and bigger every single lap. So as far as how my weekend went, I arrived late afternoon on Friday to check the course out, like I said, and Tommy himself was there. And since it was only a two-mile course and I hadn't really done anything on Friday, it was like 2.5-hour drive from where I am. I'm up in Ohio. I had to drive about 2.5 hours to get there. And it was mid-afternoon or late afternoon. I thought, I'll just walk the whole course. So I walked it. And what was funny is I turned on my watch. And I got done, and I was kind of just casually talking to Tommy, and I said, hey, I got 1.95 miles. And I said that, the reason I said that was that I was implying that it was really close, because I don't think my watch is all that darn perfect, you know? So I was saying, that's good, you know, 1.59 miles, great. What did I just say? 1.95 miles. The funny thing is, Tommy says, really, that's what you got? He was very interested, because I think he had gotten the same thing. So he actually went out onto the course and did this little tiny out and back in the middle of the course to get it to be exactly 2.0 miles. And this is the fourth year of the course, but he had changed the course a little bit. And that's why it wasn't already perfect, I guess, from the year before, because he changed it a little bit. So after he changed it, it was truly 2.00, pretty close to 2.00 miles. In the end. So I guess I helped make the course more exact, but it shows something about the race director that he was actually that concerned about the distance to get it just right, because this wasn't going to be chip timed or anything like that. It was just going to be hand recorded, and he wanted, people to have proper distances. So that's pretty cool. And my watch did say 2.0 on the nose for the laps. When I got there, there was this other guy setting up named Dylan Burrows, and I'll mention him later. And he was pretty impressive. And, you know, I don't seem to have the story right anymore, but it seemed to me that he ran a 100-miler like the week before or 2 weeks before. And there was something about how he was not always in the States. Like he was, I almost want to say he was in the military, but I don't think he was. Like he did something where he was off out of the States for a period of time and couldn't race, but he was in the States and able to race for like a whopping month and a half. So he decided, well, I'm going to do as many 100-milers as I can or something. Maybe he did Burning River, a 100-miler, because that would be in July. So he might have just done that, and that wasn't good enough since he only had so many weeks. He decided to come here and wanted to try to run 100 miles again. It was some story like that, but I was kind of impressed with the guy. And I'll talk more about him at the end of this podcast, and I'll tell you about what that's about in a while. But he was there setting up that evening, so I talked to him a little bit. And then I went to my hotel and hung out at my hotel and got there the next morning to race at 8 a.m. And we were really lucky on the temperature. It was kind of ridiculous. I almost feel guilty because it really should have been like in the 90s. It should have been horrible. It should have been really hot and really humid, which is what anyone would think it would be in July, but it was freakishly cool. It was like in the 50s when I arrived in the morning, and most of the temperatures during the day were in the 60s to 80s. So it could not have been a better day. I mean, it's just impossible to have been better. Nice, sunshiny, warm day. But compared to what it should be, it was really amazing. The ground was in perfect shape, not a tiny bit of mud or wetness or anything like that. So again, extremely lucky. If any course records were ever going to be set on this thing, this was the year to do it. And that is exactly what did happen. So everything was all set up for a great day for a lot of people. The start of the course was kind of at the low point of the course, and you ran counterclockwise. Like I said, you started by running into these woods, and you kind of made your way up very slowly, it seemed, or like I said, at first it didn't really seem like a hill, but you were kind of going slowly uphill, and about mile one, or maybe a little before that, you were kind of at the higher point of the race, and then you ran on grass around. At one point, like I said, you kind of jumped off the loop and did a little out and back to get that 0.05 miles. And that was actually up a hill. You'd run up a hill a tiny bit and then down back down the hill. And that hill got bigger and bigger and bigger as well as you want. And then you can continue to run the loop to the start. And there was just a person there at the start finish at a table just with a gigantic poster board just recording your laps. So I'm a stickler for always making sure they record it. So every single time I would say the number of miles I had or the number of laps I had, and I would kind of watch them write it down because you don't want to blame them because they, you know, quote, screwed up later. You should take it upon yourself to make sure they record it properly. And there was an aid station at the start finish. It was not much of an aid station. It was, I can't remember exactly, but it was just some chips and some bread, and they had some Coke and I don't know, some bars or something. It wasn't a whole lot, but this race was really cheap. It was $45. And I would rather they did that because I would rather they kept it cheap and kept the aid station pretty basic, because you run by, I ran right, my car was right on the course. So I had my own little aid station set up right at my car. So you can run by your car all you want, and you can have your own aid station. So I'd rather just spend the money to get exactly what I want rather than give them extra money and they put stuff on the table that I don't need. So I think it was actually better that way for you know, a race like this where you're going to go right by your car every 2 miles, which is like every 30 minutes or less. You're going to be cruising by your car. I'd rather just make my own aid station. So that's how the course worked. I ran the first loop with Cynthia Hetty, and she's a superstar runner from Kentucky. She also is a race director. I've done at least two of her races. I've done a Louisville Love in the Hills is her race, and the Otter Creek Marathon, which is actually coming up in December. I've done that. and she helps put on some other races as well. But she's a fantastic runner. She's run Western States a number of times. And while she was doing this, she was training for UTMB, which she did finish. So she's an incredible runner. And I ran the first lap with her. And again, at the end of the podcast, I'll talk a little bit more about running with people. But she was too fast for me. The first lap, she was like doing a sprint. I was just flying. So I ran about half the lap with her. Then I just said, I'm going to slow down. Bye-bye. And she was gone. So she had told me she was going to do like 75 miles or something like that to train for UTMB. But anyway, I let her go. And I think she started a podcast herself, but I'm not exactly sure about that, but maybe she has. The day did get pretty hot. It wasn't really unbearable or anything like that. I was still in pretty good shape from my training for Western States, the race that I did not finish, but I was still in pretty good shape from that. And I ran pretty smoothly all day, actually, about 2 laps per hour for the most part. Pretty much all day, obviously getting a little slower at the end, but roughly every 30 minutes I could do a lap to, you know, so I was getting about 4 miles per hour total. By the way, I also I have a Garmin 235 watch, and I was able to charge it while I was running. So I have this little charger called an Anker. That's the name of the company, I guess, or the brand, Anker, and it's about 3 inches long, little black round cylinder shaped thing, and I would carry that in my hand, and then it was plugged from the charger into my watch, and my watch can charge while it's working. I guess not all watches can do that, and this worked really well. I think it wouldn't work if it was like raining out, because you know your connections would be exposed. You'd have to take your watch off and put it all into a baggie or something, I think, or if it was like so humid and hot that you were sweating like crazy. But it wasn't really a problem. I actually held the charger right in my hand and just ran, and it doesn't charge instantly, but probably in a half hour or whatever, it went from like, you know, 40% up to 100 or something like that, you know. So I just had to carry it for a lap or two or something like that, and I got it all charged up again. So I only had to do that once, and was able to get it all charged. So that was kind of an experiment, but kind of fun to do. What else? Oh, there wasn't a whole lot of people doing this. There was maybe only 20 people or something doing this. And, you know, maybe roughly half in the 12-hour, half in the 24-hour. And some people were really having fun. There was a couple of guys, and I think they spent as much time sitting and drinking beer as anything. They were doing the 24-hour, I believe, but they were fun. They had a whole tent set up right next to me. So did Dylan, the guy I spoke of earlier. He actually camped overnight there. But these other guys had gotten there in the morning and set up a big tent, and a type that you can walk inside, a big four-sided tent, and they had beer and everything. I think their wives were there, or at least got there at some point, and you know, I'd come in and they're sitting in there just kind of hanging out, or I'd be on the course and they'd be sitting on a bench out in the course. But they were having a great time, and like I said, I think they were going for the 24-hour, and probably they had some distance they wanted to do. But so there was a number of people like that just doing this for a casual run. I noticed that at least one person stopped it right after 26 miles, so probably wanted to do a marathon, and some people just ran a few miles. I think they were just with other people. So everyone kind of had their own agenda, what they wanted to do for this race. Actually, I guess I have it that there were 13 of us who did the 12-hour. So I did 52 miles on the 2-mile loop. So I did 26 of the 2-mile loops. And that took me about 11 and a half hours. And then I did that little 0.5 mile out and back. I did 2 more miles of that. So I ended up with 54 miles is what I ended up doing. My watch said 54.2. So that shows you how well this thing was measured out. All those loops and everything. And was only off, if you can say, by 0.2 miles, and that could be my watch that's off. So the agreement was, you know, 54 to 54.2. That's pretty darn good agreement between the what was written down as what I did and my watch. And that actually took me 11 hours, 53 minutes, 57 seconds. I quit at that point because I didn't think I could run another half mile that fast. I just didn't really care. I could have ran fast and tried to get 54.5 miles, but I really didn't care. According to my watch, it was only about 110 feet of up and down per loop. That sounds so little, but it felt like so much more at the end. But anyway, that's what the watch said. The winner was a guy named Jason Denton. He got 56 miles, and that was a course record. I believe, actually, he lapped me fairly early, probably 4 or 5 hours. And then he just kind of stayed ahead of me the whole time, pretty much is how it went. And his wife, I think, actually, it could have been his daughter. I didn't look that closely at their ages or anything, how they looked. But his daughter got, whoever, Christy Denton, whoever that is, got 55 miles. And I'm sure that was also a course record. So she was the female winner of the 12-hour race. So pretty impressive, 56 and 55, and I got 54. So I have 13 of them did the 12-hour, and 8 did the 24-hour. So I guess there were 21 total. And in the 24-hour, the winner was Miguel Perez with 109 miles. And you'll hear something about him at the end of the podcast again. And Dylan, the guy I was talking about, did get 100 miles. He got 100.5. And I remember talking to him the night before, and he said that was his goal, just to try to get 100 miles. So well done. Like I said, I think it was a week or two after doing, I believe it was Burning River, which is not an easy 100 miler. And Cynthia did end up with 70 miles. It turns out she did 50, and then she left and came back like in the middle of the night to do 20 more. And again, that was training for UTMB. So I guess she just wanted to get the feel of doing another 20 miles while she was tired, something like that. So obviously she could have, well, I don't know about obviously, but she probably could have done 100 had she just kept going, but that was not her goal that evening. Anyway, overall, I think it was a great race. It was really, really good for training. That's why I was doing it. I was training for a race 1 month later. Very inexpensive, $45. All you got was a cotton t-shirt. So you didn't get very much. You got a cotton t-shirt, a white cotton t-shirt, says 4th annual 24-hour run for dreams on it. So very basic. No one got a medal for finishing. Only the winners got a trophy. I believe they got a trophy. So just there were four trophies for the four winners. They got a trophy. Like I said, the aid station didn't have a whole lot. There wasn't chip timing. But honestly, I would rather just kept it this way. Don't add chip timing. Don't make a big fancy aid station. Don't start giving out a bunch of medals. Don't give out fancy swag. Don't give out a jacket to the winner. Don't do anything like that, because that's just going to add to the cost. And there's nothing wrong with doing this race as a goal race. Absolutely fantastic goal race. And I may do that in the future. I may decide to try the 24-hour. But it's also a great training race. And so I would rather just keep it exactly the way it was. It was a really, really nice race to do. One interesting thing I saw at the race was there was a big tent up the night before, and I thought that was the aid station. It turned out not to be the aid station. It was one guy's setup area, and it had a little bed in it and everything. Pretty amazing. And evidently, it was a guy who came from New York, and his quest is to run 50 miles in every single state. So he actually did the 24-hour and was just walking the whole way. Was going to try to walk 100 miles. Unfortunately, things kind of went awry for this guy. Around the time I was finishing, he was having troubles with his mental state. And from what I was told, people were kind of mentioning at the finish there, they were saying that he was unable to state where he was. He was wobbly. People asked him like who the president was. He didn't know. At the same time, he was completely insistent on walking. So one of the wives of those two guys I was talking about, the tent next to me, I think she may have had some medical training, but she walked a whole lap with them just to kind of keep an eye on them, which is, you know, really nice of her. What an angel to do that. And while I was there, those two came in. And I remember that they asked him, like, how are you doing, whatever? And he was like, oh, fine. And I could see her behind him, and she was shaking her head, no, you know, like, this, he's not fine. He's not fine. And there was a policeman there who just happened to be there, I think. Well, he was related to someone with the race, maybe the race director or something. So I think he was hanging out waiting for this guy. So he checked the guy out, and eventually paramedics came. So I saw them come, and from what I heard, they determined his blood sugar was probably low, which makes sense. So anyway, I guess they checked him out and gave him some sugar of some sort, and I think he was probably okay, but I did check, and I think he only made 32 miles, so his day didn't quite go as he wanted. So good luck to you if you're listening to this, and hopefully you can get back to Kentucky and get that 50 miles, and I'm sure that won't happen again. But it was kind of an interesting thing to see, and I was very happy. Well, I assume he's okay, so I hope he's okay. Anyway, I did talk to the race director, Tommy, and I have an interview with him, and we will listen to that right now. Okay, so I'm here with the race director of the, what's it, the Run for Dreams, right?
24-hour Run for Dreams.
And the 12-hour, which
and
is...
And the 12-hour, yeah.
Which is what I did. Mm-hmm. So your name is?
Tommy Kendall.
And are you from Shelbyville?
I am. I live in Shelbyville currently, and I grew up in Shelbyville.
So, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Went away to college, came back.
Okay, we have someone coming in here. They probably need his time recorded.
Hey, there's a leader of the 24-hour, right?
Nice.
Coming in.
Let's get him on here. So we have a poster board keeping everyone's laps that they do. So that was Miguel just came in. How many miles does he have?
That is 64 miles.
64 miles, and we are at 12 and a half hours. So the guy is cooking along.
Yes, he is.
Wow, that's impressive.
Our course record before today, it was 88 miles, so I suspect that course record will go down. We also had two course records in the 12-hour male and female division.
Nice.
Actually, we had two males who broke the course record.
Yeah, I was one of them.
Well. You was one of them.
But so I still lost.
You lost.
Story of my life.
You broke the course record.
So. Well, that's what, so tell me about why you put this race on. I mean, there's obviously a theme behind it. So what's the story behind this?
So I work for the Dream Factory, who are a national children's wish granting organization. We are volunteer driven, which means we have a few thousand volunteers across the country. We have 32 chapters all the way from Oregon to New York. And we have only 3 full-time employees, and I'm one of them.
Wow.
Which means basically our overhead is not as great as some other nonprofits.
Right.
So 90% of donations to the Dream Factory goes directly to our mission.
That's excellent.
Yeah. So, whereas a lot of times, you know, you might see 55-60% go to it. So we're able to gain 90% of those donations, which is awesome for us. That's it helps us grant dreams to children with critical and chronic illnesses between the ages of 3 and 18. We do about 250 dreams a year. And we are the second largest wish-granting organization in the world.
Wow. So do you organize like the South or Midwest, or what is your position? You said there's 3 of you.
Three
are the others
of us
scattered about in other places?
Mm-hmm. We are all located in Louisville, Kentucky. I have another employee, Sierra, with me today. I actually participated this year. This is our 4th annual event. In the past, I came and I run a few miles here and there, and I would really focus on counting the laps and seeing what all is needed and things like that. Honestly, I just wanted another person out on the course, so I decided to run this year and to experience it.
Right.
And Sierra came in and helped out, so she's done a good job.
She has.
Just kind of manning the start-finish.
I don't even know how
area.
She went to the bathroom because she was always here.
Yeah. So, yeah, but it's been a great event. Couldn't ask for better weather. I mean, it was just, for early August in Kentucky, the weather was just perfect. I think we got up to maybe 80 degrees.
Yeah.
Supposed to get down in the low 60s tonight. Low humidity. Our first 3 years here, the heat index got up to about 105 each of those years. So this year, I mean, we could not ask for better weather.
I assumed it was going to be hot when I signed up.
Oh, yeah.
Surprised at this.
You would think, the first Saturday in August, if you're going to prepare for this race, you need to do some type of heat training.
Right.
But for this year, I mean, the temperature is just amazing. Right now, you know, it's just, it's awesome to be out here running. So
tell me a little bit about your own running background.
I started running in 1992 when I was in fifth grade. I just haven't stopped. I ran in through high school and through college. I wouldn't call myself an ultra runner at all.
Did 50 miles.
I did just do 50 miles of little to no training.
Is that the most you've ever run?
I've done a 50-mile race before.
Okay.
This was back in like 2007. It was a JFK.
Oh, 50. Nice. That's on my bucket list.
Yes. Yep. So I've done that one. I've done a 50K. I've ran across Kentucky twice.
Nice.
Yeah, just for fun.
Wow.
You know, just I think I did like 40 miles a day for 5 days, 5.5 days. I've done that twice. And also rode my bicycle from Shelbyville, Kentucky to Daytona Beach, Florida once.
Whoa.
Yeah, I did about almost 150 miles a day for 7 days.
150 per day?
Yeah.
That is impressive.
But my hat's off to all the runners out here. I'm not an ultra runner. I mainly focus on marathon or shorter distances. Right.
What's your fastest marathon?
252.
That is nice. Yeah. What marathon was that at?
Rocket City Marathon.
Is that in Alabama?
That's in Alabama. Huntsville, Alabama.
Rocketville, because that's where the Rocket NASA Center, whatever it's called there.
Yeah, and that was back in 2000, in either 10 or 11. I think 2010.
That's a pretty fast marathon.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done quite a bit under 3 hours, but, lately I haven't been running quite as much, and I thought I would get out here today and just kind of see what I can do. So I've signed up for the 24-hour, but I don't know if I'll get back out on the course, to be honest.
Oh, I see.
My legs are pretty trashed right now.
Well, and then you've been sitting now for a little bit, and it'll be harder to get going again, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I assume you're going to keep this going every year.
Yeah, next year will be our fifth annual. Red Orchard Park has been awesome. To us, as far as giving us a really good deal on the course,
right?
To use full access to the park, other than where the weddings go on in the barn. So other than that, we have full access to the park. Head First Performance out of Kentucky, they've been great as one of our sponsors, providing a lot of what you see out here.
I saw Cynthia here.
Cynthia Hetty and Todd Hetty, awesome people. They were out here running today as well. Cynthia has completed 50, and she's going to come back at 3 a.m. and run 25 more.
Oh, I thought she said she was doing 75, I was wondering why she was leaving. She's going to come back. That's impressive,
because she's in the midst of training for some things. So
I heard she's doing UTMB.
Yes.
She's amazing. She's a great runner.
A lot of the runners out here, this is a good opportunity to use as a training
run. That's exactly what I did.
Because it's a 24-hour event, and say you're doing a 100-miler, if you drop out at 80, you get a did not finish. You don't get credit for those 80 miles.
Here, you never get a DNF.
Exactly.
Unless you don't do a lap, I guess. Anyone can do 2 miles.
Yeah. So it's a great opportunity to come out if you feel like doing. If you want to come out here and do a long run for a marathon and run 20, 22 miles, get your people to run with.
Yep. The price is right for it.
Yeah, the price is, we keep the price down to attract more runners.
Right.
The price is great. The course, we altered this year. Added a little bit more trails, a lot more shade in the past years. And with the good weather today, I mean, that's another factor. The good weather plus the more shade. At times it's challenging. I felt like the first lap I did today, I didn't really see many hills.
The hills got bigger every single lap.
Absolutely.
Because I walked it last night, and I was telling people, it's flat.
Yeah.
And then I ran the whole first loop, and after that I was already walking the little hills.
Yeah, by the time I got to 40 miles, I was thinking like, I don't remember there being a hill here at all. And I'm going up this incline, and I can see it, and I can definitely feel it.
There's been about five other people who said the exact same thing.
Yeah, this morning I was just felt like I was just running flat almost the whole way.
The hills just kept growing as we went. So.
But that's anytime you're dealing with trails and grass in a park especially, you're going to deal with those type of things. I think it adds to a little bit to the challenge and also variety. Versus just a flat course. And that's another reason why I feel like it's good training for other events,
too. Absolutely.
So.
All right. Well, I enjoyed the race, and I'll tell people about it. And
awesome.
Thanks for putting it on, and maybe I'll see you next year.
Yeah. Great job today.
Thank you. Okay, there you go. Testing. I'm testing something here. Okay, I think we're maybe okay. Testing. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Okay, I just discovered I did not have my pop filter on, and I just discovered it during the interview, so I may have had a lot of popping PPPs during the first part there, but the pop filter is now on, so hopefully the quality will be better. The volume may have shifted a little bit because of putting on the pop filter, but anyway, oopsie, that happens. All right, so that is all I have about that race, other than to say I encourage all of you to check this out. There's no reason only 21 people are doing this. I don't think the place can hold hundreds, but it could hold way more than 21, and it's a really good training race, like I said. So everyone, please go check this out. It was a really fun time, very, very, very casual, and you can just run however many laps you want and have a really fun time. The last thing I'll say is, and I was alluding to this as I was talking earlier, that I was going to have some stuff later. If you are dedicated to my show and have listened to all the episodes, you might remember that in August, I did something called the Dog Days of Podcasting Challenge. I did a show every single day in August, and there were shorter shows ranging from a few minutes to a little over 20 minutes, which means I did shows while I was doing this race. So I did a show the day before the race, the day of the race, and the day after the race. I did a show. So you may have already heard me talk about this race, but I hadn't put in the interview and talked about the race just overall, so that's why I wanted to do this episode. But you may have heard me already talk about some of these things. So I am going to play those again at the end of this podcast. After my book review, I'm putting those August 4th, 5th, and 6th. I'm going to play those at the end. That way, if you've already listened to them and don't want to listen to them again, you can just turn it off, or you can play at double speed or something if you want. Or if you haven't listened to them, you can listen to them. And I did edit them down a little bit. They're shorter than they were on those days. I got rid of some of the stuff that's not needed. So I will play those at the end. So you'll hear me talk about Dylan again, and maybe Cynthia again, and the race director again, and some of the things I just said, you can hear me repeat again. But there is some added stuff about the race, some observations that you might enjoy that about what happened to me during the race. I actually had my phone out and I talked while I was doing the course. I talked, and I have some of that recording. So that'll be played at the very end. Okay. But before we get to that, I'm going to do a book review. This is my very first book review, and this is something I've been wanting to do. It's just a matter of finding time to read books. I read a lot of magazines, and I'm so far behind in my magazines that to read a book puts me even farther behind in my magazines. But I did read one. I wanted to read this one, and this book is this first book review is not because this is the greatest book ever or anything like that. It just happens to be what I read right now. Okay, so and it's not a bad book either. It's just what I read right now, and as long as I read it, I'm going to do a book review of it. And I have a whole bunch of other books, some that I've already read, but I'll probably read them again, so there's more fresh in my mind to do a book review, and some which I have not read. This book I just finished up 2 or 3 days ago, so it's pretty fresh in my head, and I took notes about the book. The book is called Your Best Stride by Jonathan Beverly. And I did hear him on a couple of other podcasts, so people did actually interview him. That's not really what I want to do. I just want to kind of give my opinion on the book. So that's the book. It's published by Rodale. That's the company that puts out Runner's World magazine and Bicycling magazine, I think. And they publish other athletic-type books. And it came out in 2017, this year. Jonathan Beverly is the editor-in-chief of Running Times magazine, or was the editor-in-chief of Running Times magazine from 2000 to 2015. I think he does write for Runner's World now. He's also a runner of marathons himself and has coached at many levels. Like, he's a cross-country coach, I believe, a personal coach, and so on. So he does seem to know his stuff. There's a subtitle to the book called How to Optimize Your Natural Running Form to Run Easier, Farther, and Faster with Fewer Injuries. It's 13 chapters, 216 pages. So the general gist of this book goes like this. Most folks assume that not only is there no one perfect running form, but also that no one should ever try to change their current form. All right, so this is one thing you hear a lot of people say. There's not one way to run, and don't try to change it. That is a problem. If you try to change it, it's a waste of time, and at best, it's very harmful. Your body will find its best running form naturally the more you run. I know that Matt Fitzgerald is one guy who takes this point of view. Don't try to change your running form. It is a waste of time. You'll do more harm than good. Your body is unique, and you cannot run like anyone else because all your bones and ligaments and muscles and everything are shaped in a certain way, and you will run to optimize your body. No two people can really run the same. There is a second group of people, though, who disagrees with that, who kind of takes the opposite point of view, and they say, no, there's a certain way you should run. It's a skill, like hitting a baseball or throwing a football or shooting a basketball. It is a skill that you need to learn. And there are certain things that have been noticed that good runners do. For example, running with a cadence of 180. Many of us have heard that. We've also heard about forefoot striking. There's a proper posture, a proper arm swing. And therefore, you should try to work toward these ideal running forms. All right, so Jonathan takes an in-between approach. He says there probably is a best form, but it is not the same for everyone. So you notice he's saying, yes, there is a best way for you to run, and it is different for everyone. There probably is a best cadence. It may not be 180, but it might be faster than what you're doing now. There is a best posture to run with. But the problem is that our modern-day lifestyle has ruined our bodies, and we cannot run in this ideal form. So notice what he's saying. He is saying, yes, you have your own individual best running style, kind of agreeing with Matt Fitzgerald and these people who say don't mess with it. You have your own best running style. On the other hand, he is saying, you're not doing it. You can't do it because our modern-day lifestyle has screwed us up. For example, we sit all the time. All of you have heard people say we sit too much. Because we sit so much, our hip flexors, the muscles right in front of our hips, are all messed up. They're really tight. We can't extend them backwards. Also, our shoulders are hunched forward. They're hunched forward from sitting, from texting, from driving, from reading books. All of these things have brought our shoulders in forwards, which means our arms are not getting back the way they should. And so you notice a couple of things. Our legs don't go backwards the way they should, and our arms don't go backwards the way they should. We're all hunched over from our hips, and our shoulders are all hunched over. And so we can't even run even what our own best form should be. So what he is saying, what you need to do is not just try to force a better running form. You can't just say, go forefoot strike. Go pick up your cadence. You can't do that because your body's not able to do that. All right. You cannot do that if you wanted to. If you try to do it, it would just be unnatural and it would be a problem. Instead, he's saying you need to fix your body. You need to fix those hip flexors, for example. That's a big one. You need to fix those hip flexors. Also, our glutes don't work with a darn anymore because when you sit, your butt muscles don't do a thing. When you stand, they work. Well, we sit so much that our butt muscles have forgotten how to work, and our butt muscles are very, very important in running. So guess what? You need to build up your butt muscles. We should all have big, massive, honest, awesome butt muscles, and we don't. We all have wimpy butt muscles. I guess even if we have big butts, we have rotten butt muscles. So let's just kind of go over the book here. He begins by noting that we naturally run to use the least amount of energy and that causes the least amount of pain. This is kind of what the Matt Fitzgerald and these other people say. We will find a way to run that uses the least amount of energy possible. We don't consume any more oxygen than we need to, and it causes the least amount of pain. Try to run it any different way, and things will just get worse. And it's a little bit different for everyone, as people say, because we're all differently shaped. We all got different bodies, different muscles, muscle lengths, bone lengths, limb lengths. Our ligaments are different thicknesses, different strengths, tendons, bones are all shaped a little bit different. Okay, so we all have our best form, but our modern lifestyles are keeping us from finding this best form. For example, sitting has shortened our hip flexors, so on. So, as we've stated, he notes that, for example, fish don't get fin injuries. I thought this was pretty funny. How come fish don't get fin injuries? They're using them all the time. Well, because they're swimming all the time. They're always in proper form. They don't sit and, like, you know, slack off and lose their fin strength or whatever, because they're always doing it. If we were always walking, you know, 10 hours a day and running and, you know, up and about many, many, many hours a day, we would naturally be running in our proper form. He notices, as some people before have said, that a four-year-old runs naturally. They will just run with proper form, and they can go slow, they can go fast, whatever they want. But by the time you're 16 years old, you've just spent over a decade in a desk, hunched over, arms in front of you, hip flexors getting all shortened. Also, our feet are ruined because we put them in these tiny shoes. So that's another problem we have, is rotten feet that are all deformed and weakened by being stuck into small shoes. He talks about foot strike. That's a big topic. And he knows there's not really a best foot strike. Kind of goes back and forth. But some people do hit on the heels, and that doesn't mean they're hitting hard. Sometimes people hit on the heels, but they just kind of kiss the ground with their heels, for example. So, and your foot strike can even change if you're running uphill, downhill, on dirt, if you're fatiguing a little bit more, if you're running fast, running slow, your foot strike actually will change a bit every time you do that stuff. So, and he also mentions this. Foot strike is not as magical as it appears. No matter what you do, your body has to absorb impact. You cannot run in a way that all of a sudden you have less impact because your feet hit the ground differently. When your feet hit the ground differently, it just means where the impact is absorbed can change. Do you absorb it in your feet or in your ankles or in your knees or in your hips? Where it is absorbed the most can move around. So that is what foot strike can do. But no matter what, you've got to absorb that landing every single time. It just moves around. So if you forefoot strike very well, you actually may have more foot problems. If you heel strike, you may have more knee problems. So either way, you could have problems. It just depends on where the problem is. He does note that most likely we're all overstriding in front. Again, we're all overstriding in front. We're overstriding in the front because our hip flexors are so weak we cannot get our legs back. Our legs should be flowing backwards far behind us, and that should be this great push-off we have. But because our hip flexors are so tight, we cannot do that, and we make up for it by reaching out in the front and then pulling. We land in front, and then we pull because we cannot get the push-off with our legs behind us. So this is one problem that we all have. So again, he's not saying, all right, just stop overstriding. He's going to say we got to fix the hip flexors. We got to get those stretched out so that we can get the legs back. Excuse me, I have to cough. All right, sorry about that. All right, one goal is to loosen the hip flexors. Another goal is going to be to He talks a lot about balancing the hips. This is a little bit fuzzy to me. So there's a lot of talk about getting the hips and your posture quite right. That's the fuzziest part of the book to me. Loosening the hip flexors, I understand that, and strengthening the glutes, that I understand pretty well. You also need to get your arms back. That sounds like a tough task to do. It's kind of hard to loosen up the shoulders. But that is one goal you need to have, and you're going to do that probably by having cues and just learning to run with a better posture. So that is one. So now I'm kind of contradicting myself, and so does he. That is one you have to do by just trying to get yourself to do it, this better posture that you need. So it's not all just fixing your body. Some of it is this mental game of trying to run with a better form. But supposedly, if you strengthen your glutes, fix your feet a little bit, and fix those hip flexors. And you can actually stretch the shoulders as well. You can fix the shoulders to some degree. If you do these things, all these other things will be easier to do or will come more naturally. The idea is that it should come naturally. You shouldn't really have to force yourself to fix these running form problems because you fix your body, and that fixes the running form problems. One thing he advocates, and this kind of goes against the grain, is truly static stretching the hip flexors. So he says, yes, you really need to stretch them. Old school stretching, static stretching. And he provides a few stretches. You know, one is you just grab your, you know, you're standing, you just grab your ankle and pull up and do that way. And, you know, anything just to stretch it out front. And he says, really, you need to stretch it for 3 to 5 minutes, 4 to 6 times per week for up to 10 to 12 weeks. For a few months, you need to be stretching practically every day for quite a few minutes. And this isn't just loosening it up. You need to actually tear the tissues around the muscle fibers and make them truly lengthen over time. All right? So the way this goes against the grain is we're really told now how useless stretching is. And it all comes from, like, I don't know if it's one study, but a couple of studies where you've heard it. They had some guys stretch right before like a 10K, and then they ran a 10K, and they didn't do as well as if they didn't stretch. And from that study, they've concluded that we should never, ever, ever stretch. To me, that is a gigantic, silly leap. I actually do stretch, although I call it more loosening up. I don't do this type of stretching, this true stretching. I do loosen up a lot with little stretches because it feels good. And my guess is, in this study, they probably really stretched a lot. Like, they stretched the calves a whole bunch and the hamstrings and the quads a whole bunch, got them really, really, really loose, and then ran a 10K. And what that does is it lowers the stiffness in those muscles and ligaments and bones, probably more the ligaments and tendons, I guess, mostly. You lose the stiffness in those, and that means you lose the energy return when you land and take off. So, yes, you would be slower. But that one fact doesn't mean you should never stretch ever at any other time. And that's the way people have interpreted that now for the last decade or so. And lots of people just completely quit stretching. So he says, well, this is a case when you really do want to truly stretch. So I'm actually going to try this, folks, because I think I have very tight hip flexors. So I'm going to give this a try. I've actually started doing the 3 to 5 minute stretches a little bit. I had a big race 1 week ago. So that's kind of, I'm just recovering from that. And now it's Thanksgiving week, so we'll see what I do. But I actually have already started doing this. I'm going to try to really, truly lengthen these hip flexors. We'll see what I can do. He also talks about ways to test your glute strength and to strengthen it. Basically, the test and the strengthening is the same thing. And some of these, you know, like doing bridges. You can do standing hip extensions, kind of like donkey kicks. Of course, doing squats. You can do side leg lifts, simple exercises. But you need to do these things to build up your glute strength. And you have to make sure you're like touching your butt when you do them, so you feel your butt doing the work. Because you can do these things and your hamstrings can be doing the work. And that's the reason your hamstrings do the work, is because your butt is so weak. So you kind of need to touch your butt and do some of these things and feel your butt doing the work to try to strengthen those. And I actually have been doing that for quite some time, for a few years I've been doing that, but I'm going to try to do it a little bit more seriously after reading this book. I've made a real list that I'm going to try to do like at least 4 times a week. I'm going to try to do these. That's on top of the fact that I do a leg serious weight workout every week. There's not a whole lot of reason to do a lot of other core work. Strengthening your abs doesn't do much. In fact, he doesn't really say this, but in my opinion, that's dangerous, because if you do too much ab strengthening, you're probably simultaneously strengthening your hip flexors. Well, you don't really need to strengthen your hip flexors. That's just going to tighten them up more. He does suggest planks, but again, he's specific in how those should feel when you're doing them. You have to do them kind of just right, and I need to read it again to see what he means. And I think basically he's going to say, excuse me again, he's going to say that you need to feel it in your butt, to feel it in your butt muscles when you're doing the planks, not to feel it like probably not in the front of your quads and just your abs when you're doing the planks. He does try to provide some ways to improve our upper body posture and form. One problem is that, like the legs, we don't swing our arms back enough because, like the hip flexors, they are too tight in the front. So he does give one idea that he says, yes, you should stretch it. Actually, literally stretch your shoulders every day. So I'm going to start trying to do that some. But he also says one thing that's kind of interesting is to take a pipe that's like 2 feet long and put it against your back horizontally, your lower back, and then put your arms around it. So the pipe would be in the crook of your elbows. So imagine that. Put your arms back and put the pipe in the crook of your elbows and then go run. And what will happen is that you can't even swing your arms forward, but that'll cue you, give you the idea that of how you really should be getting your arms back better. You should actually, every time your arm swings back, your thumb or your hand should touch like your waistband, like your hip. It should touch there. If you're running and your hands are always in front of you, you can always see them, you're doing it wrong. And by wrong, it just means your body is not able to get them back properly. So you really want to be able to get the arms back. And that also cues the legs to get back, evidently, to do it. Again, we kind of get this contradiction where he's saying, you know, do these things, even though maybe your body can't. But I think he's trying to say, yeah, you should also be strengthening the shoulder or lengthening these shoulder muscles in front and doing this so your body's cued to do it. I don't know how well cueing works. So cueing is the idea that you do something momentarily, you think about something, and then your body learns to do it. Everyone acts like that should work. You know, all coaches will say, oh yeah, if you do that, it'll work. Over time, you'll improve. I guess we just accept that that actually works, this type of cueing. So same thing, like if you try to increase your cadence, evidently if you do think about it every now and then after a while, you don't have to think about it and your cadence will increase, you know, that type of thing. I don't know. I don't know how well that works, but I kind of do want to try this pipe in my back just for fun to see what that feels like. He talks about the feet. He doesn't advocate barefoot running per se because it's a recipe for injury. Possibly you could step on a piece of glass as well, stuff like that. But he does like getting barefoot as much as you can. For instance, when you get in your house, get your darn shoes off right away. Anytime you can take your shoes off and walk, take your shoes off and walk. Also do drills like on a football field is probably really ideal. Do some running drills on a football field and barefoot. And this is really good for strengthening the feet properly. Later, I'll talk about shoes that you should wear. He talks about things you can actually do for your toes to stretch the toes with a toe spreader. Believe it or not, I've already been doing that. I bought this little toe spreader and I've been spreading my toes out every night for a little while. It's probably totally silly. I'm embarrassed to even say I'm doing it because I probably won't do anything, but it kind of feels good. It doesn't really feel good, but I kind of like doing it anyway. Every night I spread out my toes because my toes are really, really horrible. I have really bad bunions, which I'll mention in a moment, or a bad bunion on one foot and the other foot's not much better. He does talk about cadence, by the way, and he goes back and forth, again, a little bit contradictory. And he goes back and forth on its importance. Like one moment he's saying there's no one perfect cadence, like 180. But then he's kind of saying probably, possibly you are striding too slowly. Again, maybe because of your hip flexors. And it might not be a bad thing to try to speed up your cadence a little bit. So he's a little bit fuzzy on this. The idea is not so much the cadence itself, but that a little quicker cadence might mean you can't overstride as well, and you'll land under yourself better. If you land underneath yourself better, you're better off than if you land in front. That overstriding, where you're landing in front, is hard on the body, evidently, and then you've got to pull the body towards you, so not easy on the hamstrings as well, and you're not using your glutes. You should be landing below you, pushing off. That uses the butt power, and this is better. So, you know, again, a little contradictory, but he is saying, hey, try to speed your cadence up a little bit, maybe. again, I assume while you're doing all these other things to improve your body. One thing he suggests, and this is one thing I'm big on myself, is varying your training. In other words, run at different paces. Don't always go the same speed. Different surfaces, trails, concrete, tracks. Run in different shoes. You should not be running in the same shoes every day. Have at least two. I personally have way too many. I have about 15 pairs of shoes, and I rotate through them, not in any formulaic way, but I rotate through them all the time. I've got trail shoes and shoes I'll run if I'm going a little longer, or a little bit shorter, and that type of thing. I do it just partly because I do run on different surfaces, but I just instinctually I kind of like doing it. Just seems right to me, but I never had any real science behind it, and I'm not sure he does either. But he says, yeah, you should try to vary your shoes. So I would suggest everyone have at least really 3 or 4 pair of shoes that you rotate through. And it doesn't mean every single time. It might be one pair of shoes you only use every 2 or 3 weeks. But at least over a course of a week, at least run in 2 different shoes in the course of a week. Because you'll probably, for most people, you're not doing the exact same 6-mile run every single time you run. And even if you did, you can still vary the shoes a little bit. And one reason you vary is, and he talks about this a decent amount, is you need to open these new neuromuscular pathways. So that's partly what the different cadence will do either. So change your cadence as well. If you vary things a lot, your body's forced to change its normal running style to do that, and you may fall into the proper running form. So if you're always running the exact same way, and it's not the best way for your body because our bodies are screwed up. Even if you fix everything, you fix your hip flexors, you fix your shoulders, you fix your glutes, if you never vary the way you run, you still may not be able to get out of that rut. But if you do things like run different ways, different drills, different shoes, your body will kind of start to flow in different ways, and your body will be able to find this proper way of running. Again, how scientific all of this is, I don't know, but he does try to bring science in when he can. Actually, I think he does say there's some science behind that idea. There is a chapter on shoes, and one thing he suggests is don't get freaked out about the whole pronation thing. Pronation, there's little evidence pronation's a problem. That's where your feet turn inward. And even stability shoes that are supposed to keep you from pronating, there's no evidence you really work. So even if a shoe has this big arch built into it to keep from pronating, inside the shoe you can still pronate. That was interesting. I never really heard that before. So really, he says, find the shoe that feels right, and if possible, the lightest shoe you can that feels well. And it's going to change for every person. It's going to change as you age. Some people need more cushioning than others, but try to get a light shoe and one that just feels good. And some people will need more of a stability shoe. It will feel better. Or maybe over the years, you'll want to have at least one pair of shoes that's a stability type shoe and one pair of shoes that's almost a minimalist type of shoe that you might use for some occasions. And maybe shoes with more cushioning. And another thing this does is helps with the variation principle. Your shoes are changing all the time. That means your feet are always hitting at different angles and different amount of cushioning, different impact. That keeps varying all the time. And that's helpful in stabilizing and building up all different types of muscles in your shoe. It's not the exact same angle, exact same muscles being hit the exact same way every single time. You're varying everything, and that's also good. He does mention that wide shoes really are good. It's nice to be able to let your feet, toes spread. And he does mention Altra and Topo shoes as possibilities. He doesn't really, about the only time he talks about any brands, but he does bring those two brands up. And I have Altra, I have Topo, I have them both, and I like them both pretty much. And I'd also throw in Skechers. Believe it or not, Skechers have wide shoes that are pretty nice. Although more shoes are now getting wider, so that's good. Speaking back to the bunion thing, one thing he noticed is that bunions are caused by your shoes being too narrow, because we've all grown up with these shoes that have come to a point, which makes no sense because our feet are not pointed, which is, you know, why the Altra and Topo shoes are could be better, because they're not pointed at the top. But one thing he noted, he said that I didn't know, he says that bunions are actually a progressive dislocation of the big toe joint. So on my right foot, I have a big bunion. So that's my big toe progressively dislocating over the years. So that's kind of nasty. So back, getting towards the end, he does talk about these form cues. These are things that you can say to yourself every now and then. And he talks about some of the very best ones to try to think about. So again, you're doing all these other things, fixing your glutes, fixing your hip flexors, your shoulders, and so on, varying everything you run on. So you're doing all that type of stuff. But one thing he says is one cue is run tall. So run tall just lifts up your upper body, gets your hips below you good, and aligns everything from your basically from your feet all the way to your head. So run tall. A second one would be elbows back. Just a reminder, keep your elbows back so your arms aren't always swinging just in front of you. Like I said, you should really be touching your waistband and the side of your hips with every single stride, or your arms really aren't getting back enough. And another one is to try to run softly or quietly. So if you're slapping the ground really hard, that is not as good as if you're making a little bit of noise and running quietly. And evidently, there's science behind this as well. So if you say those three cues to yourself every now and then, again, the idea is you shouldn't have to say them every minute. And hopefully, at some point, you rarely ever have to say them to yourself. But those are kind of three cues. So again, that is contradicting the premise of the book a little bit, which is you're supposed to be, if you just fix your body, you will naturally run better. But he also includes these cues. And I think the way, again, that works is that, yes, you have to fix your body, but then you after you fix it or while you're fixing it, you need to be changing how your body's running to fall into this best form. So by running tall, elbows back, running softly, varying the surface, and all these things, your body would then eventually find its best form if you can put all of this together. He gives an action plan at the very end, and there are six parts to this. Actually, there's more, but I picked six of them. One is mix up your training. Like I said, paces, terrain, cadence, shoes or no shoes, activities like cross training. Number two, improve your hip extension. That's your hip flexors. When you're gonna have to stretch to do that. Number three, activate and strengthen the glutes. Number four, do running drills to shake up the neuromuscular system and strengthen muscles. So some of the drills are like running backwards, doing karaoke, if you know that, skipping, butt kicks. So he does like those drills. And by the way, I do too. I like those drills. I do those sometimes. I don't do them enough, though. I need to start doing them much more often. Number five, strengthen your feet. And number six, run tall and your arms back, those cues. So that is pretty much it for the book. Why am I personally interested in this book? Number one, I'm trying to ward off injuries myself. I'm always on the verge of little injuries or becoming, and I worry they're going to become bigger injuries every now and then. They do stop me to some extent. And so I'm just getting nervous about little niggles, I guess we would say. I've had one on my knee for couple years now, and it doesn't really keep me from doing much, but it makes me really nervous, and sometimes it's a little worse than another. I have painful feet often, so I'm trying to fix that. I know I have these tight hip flexors. I mean, I can just feel it, so I really would love to get those loosened up. Number two, I would just like to be stronger and more efficient with my running. I have to say I side with people who say there is a best way to run. I cannot believe running is a physical activity. Every other physical activity I know is somewhat of a skill. So I can't believe there's no skill to running. There's no intellectual way of thinking about running. So I would like to, that's just my opinion. So I want to be more efficient with my running, and I just want to be stronger overall. I want my glutes to be working the way they should be working. And number three, I'm a cross-country coach. And so I'm looking for the best ways to help my cross-country runners. And that generally includes, number one, what little drills can we do before and after practice that are help? What's the most effective little set of, you know, 10 minutes before practice, 10 minutes after practice, whatever. What's the most effective things we can do? And also these cues. And by the way, I've already before I read this book, I always yell at them to run tall and elbows back. So I guess I was doing those even before reading this book. Those are two cues I'll give them during a race. I guess another one I do give them often is relax. At the beginning of a race, I'll say, relax, breathe, breathe, because, you know, they're at mile one and they're all tightened up. So that's another cue I give them. So what's my personal Tim Smith's action plan? So right now I'm going to try to do this hip flexor stretching as many days a week as I can. Another thing I'm doing is this jumping rope. This was not in the book. I got this from Sean Bearden's Science of Ultra podcast, where he talked about strengthening ligaments and tendons and bones, because, like I said, I have all this foot pain and these really rotten ankles, and I wonder how much is foot tendons and ligaments and stuff. So there's an idea that if you take in some gelatin protein, I'm embarrassed to say I'm doing this, all right? But the idea is you take in some gelatin protein. Gelatin protein has certain amino acids that your tendons and ligaments really, really love. And if you take a little bit of that in and wait about an hour and jump rope for about 5 minutes, you will strengthen them. It's an odd thing. You really don't want to jump more than about 5 minutes. It actually starts to reverse the goodness of this all, of all this. So that's something I've been doing a little bit. You don't really have to jump rope. You can just jump up and down. And I also will take it sometimes just before I run, this gelatin protein. But it's probably a fad thing, and in 6 months I'll throw all the gelatin out, because many times I've tried something and thought it was stupid eventually. So that's another thing I've been doing. Also, another thing I've been doing is, if I'm not doing a lot of running, like right now I'm kind of in my off season, I'm going to take a little time off running, try to use the elliptical more. I've just come to this conclusion where often if I wasn't running, I'd cycle, I'd bike. I'd go outside and bike, or I would go on a spin bike. And I still will keep doing that because I like doing it. But one thing I just realized, kind of reading this book, one problem with biking is it keeps those hips bent the whole time. You don't really get an extension. And I was thinking about when you use the elliptical, you can actually get your legs behind you. The cadence is slow, so that's not as good. But actually, a couple hours ago, I just used the elliptical. I just did it today. And I was really thinking about it when I was doing it. For one, I was getting my legs behind me, and I was standing very tall. One thing you can do in the elliptical is kind of hunch over. And I was standing very tall, and I held the little bars that swing. I held them at a certain spot that got my arms back as much as I could. And go on the elliptical and think about this. Think about swinging your legs back, standing very tall so your hips are right beneath you. And you can actually turn it into a pretty close to a running motion in a way. The only bad thing is your cadence is slow. So I'm going to start doing more elliptical if I'm not running. If I'm going to replace a run with something, I'm going to start replacing it with an elliptical more than a bike. I still always bike about twice a week, but that's because I just like biking. And I'm also going to create a hip and a glute and a foot strengthening routine. I've already done that using this book and two other books. Jay DeCherry has a book called Anatomy for Runners, and John Vonhoff has a book called Fixing Your Feet. I may review those as well at some point. So I've made a little routine, which I'm hoping won't take me more than about 15 minutes. I'm going to try to do that about four times a week as well, minimum, to, again, activate and strengthen these hips and glutes and feet, get them all strengthened up. Again, that's on top of the fact that I do a leg weightlifting routine every week. And I also do upper body every week. Anyway, there you go. There's a review of the book. Kind of, yeah, I don't know if it was quick, but kind of a fast overview of the different chapters. I do recommend the book. I recommend everything, because you can't really go wrong reading as long as you don't take things too seriously. And I usually don't take things super, super, super seriously. I'm kind of picking the things I like best about this book and going to give them a try. In 6 months from now, I may be doing none of this stuff, but I'm going to give it a try, and maybe I'll report back about the hip flexor stretching to see if that's helping, or any of these other things. I'll let you know if they're doing any good, but anyway, we're going to give it a try. It's always, I enjoy just trying new things, you know. Often I chuck them eventually, but I enjoy. So this crazy jump rope thing, I may throw it away, but it's fun to try, I think, and maybe other people don't like trying things like this, but I do. And that is it for today. We are done. So again, find out more about me at runsmith.net. And here's a new thing. I don't think I've said much. Leave a review or a rating on iTunes. I don't think I've asked this. Please, 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 right now, either do it now or send yourself an email if you're out and about. Send yourself an email and say, rate and review topics in endurance sports. Please, 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 please. If you can do that, you would be my hero. Okay, I would really, really like that. And that is it for today. So after this, don't leave, because now I'm going to play three segments from August 4th, 5th, and 6th. And if you already listened to those and don't want to hear it again, turn it off. Or you can listen to it, or if you want to listen to it again or something, you can put on double speed. It's probably at least a half hour long. So there's going to be three segments. First, you're going to hear August 4th. That's the day before I did the race. And then you're going to hear August 5th. You'll hear me talk about what happened on race day itself. And then August 6th, the day after the race, I talk a little bit more. So please, please again, 24-hour Run for Dreams, 12-hour Run for Dreams. Please sign up and do it if you can, if you're in the area. Great training race. Thank you, Tommy Kendall. I really enjoyed it. And stay tuned for another half hour or so of me talking about that race. Otherwise, this is Ron Smith Enterprises presenting topics in endurance sports, signing out. Have a fun workout.
So after that, after I ate, I came home and I packed all my stuff because I'm doing a race tomorrow. And I am coming to you from Shelbyville, Kentucky. Yes, that's where I'm at. I'm about 30 miles east of Louisville. Now, that's how most of us would say it, but I think the locals say Louisville. And even I'm not doing it quite right. They have their own little way of doing it, Louisville, something like that. But the rest of us would say Louisville, because that's what it looks like. So this is, I actually looked up some stats on Shelbyville. So this is a town of 14,000 people, established in 1792. The only other things I could find interesting about this pretty small town is that it is the saddlebred capital of the world. I didn't even know that a saddlebred was a breed of horse, but it is the saddlebred capital of the world. Of course, Kentucky, you think of horses, right? Kentucky Derby and all of that. The only other fact I discovered was Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken, and yes, there really was a Colonel Sanders. He lived here from 1960 until he died in 1980. There you go, Shelbyville, Kentucky. So I came down here to Shelbyville, and I really enjoy driving, like if you get off the main interstate and you're on the country roads, I really enjoy just going through small towns, you know, in areas I've not been. I mean, I've been to Kentucky a number of times, but not quite right here. So I kind of like going through little towns. I like seeing what stores they have, what the architecture looks like, you know, especially old towns. Going through farmland, looking at the fields, you know, what junk is lying around, and anything about just going through some place I've, you know, not explored or not seen before. So I did enjoy that coming down here. And when I got here, I ate at a place called Penn Station because there are restaurants I don't know what they are, or they were just chain restaurants. So I don't know if anybody's ever been to a Penn Station. It's just a sandwich shop. I like it. The bread is really good. Otherwise, it's just, I got a pizza sandwich. You know, it's cheese and pepperoni and onions and green peppers and pizza sauce. And then I got some fries with it. Their fries are actually really good. So is that the best thing to eat the night before a race? It is for me. I'm fine with it. I don't really care. It doesn't matter a whole lot what I eat before the race. It was a lot of calories, but I'm going to burn them off tomorrow for the most part. So Penn Station, they have them in, I know they're in Indianapolis, Indiana, because I've had them there. They're up in Ohio where I came from. It was about a two and a half hour drive to get here, pretty much straight south. And they have them here. That's about all I know. I don't want to know more because it seems to me anytime I find information about people who own chains, it's always bad. It's always people that are like, who give money towards enslaving minority people in some country to dig gold mines, to give the money to anti LGBTQ organizations, you know, or something like that. And, you know, they like to rape the earth and shoot all types of wild game just so they can stick it on their wall and all that type of stuff. It's always, so I try not to know anything about who owns these restaurants because it seems like it's always bad news. But anyway, that's Penn Station. It is good food. I kind of like it. You might not, but I kind of like it. So let's see. After that, I drove to the race course to check it out. So I kind of know where to go tomorrow. My hotel and the race course are only a few miles away. The Penn Station was in between, so everything's pretty close. So this race is a type of race I've never, ever done before. It is a two-mile loop, almost all on grass. There's a little bit of dirt trail. It's at a park. And it's a two-mile loop, and I will run the two-mile loop as many times as I can for 12 hours. That's the race. I've never done a timed race. Any other race I've ever done has been a distance, a 5K or 10K or a half marathon or a marathon or whatever. In this case, I will run as much as I can for 12 hours. In case you're wondering, no, I will not run straight for 12 hours. I'm not that good. I will take walk breaks. I will stop every now and then. I'll go to the bathroom. I'll probably get tired enough. I'll end up just walking loops. That's quite possible. Or doing a run walk where maybe I run for 5 minutes or walk for 5 minutes, because I'll end up very sore, very tired at some point. And this is only a training run. I have a big race coming up in September, so I just threw this in. I just found it a couple of weeks ago and signed up like a week ago. It's very cheap. It's $45, which is really cheap for 12 hours of them being there. So anyway, that's what I'll be doing tomorrow, just a training run. The course is pretty flat. There's no big hills in it or anything like that. So it's just, I could go out and do this on my own, right? Just go out and run on my own. But it's a lot easier when it's an organized event. Way, way, way easier to have the motivation to go out and run. So I'm not even going to say how far I want to run. We'll see what it is tomorrow. I guess I could say, but we'll see how far I get tomorrow. When I do this, I'll leave you in a suspense as to even what I could possibly do in that time. But I've never done one, so there's some interesting mental aspects to this, because usually I have a finish line to get to, and I know either I'm going to get to it and finish, or I will not get to it and I will fail. In this case, I cannot fail. There's no failure. I could run one lap and I didn't fail. I just didn't run very far. So there's no finish line, which is kind of strange, but that's the way it is. So I think mentally it'd be very different. How about a little bit about what I brought, my gear? I overpack things. So I have three different hats. Actually, I have two hats and a visor. I've got three shirts, one just regular t-shirt type of thing, and two sleeveless. It's going to be unbelievably beautiful weather. I can't believe it. It's going to be between 60 and 80 degrees. It's ridiculously nice. And I walk the whole course, and the course is dry. Things like this almost never happen, so it's quite amazing. So I have two pair of running shorts. I have six pairs of socks. I have no idea why I brought six pairs of socks. And they're all in Gingy. That means these are toe socks, so that you each toe has its own little spot for it, little toe socks, like gloves for your toes. And I wear these because they help me avoid getting blisters. Very much like them. I have no clue why I brought six. I'll pick one of them. Oh, actually, one of them is not. I brought another pair of socks. So five toe socks and one that isn't. I brought four pair of shoes. And all of these things, I only need one. But I don't know, sometimes this is a training run, so I might switch off shoes just for fun, just to see how different ones feel. The different shirts, you know, I may start with the regular shirt and then switch to a sleeveless when it starts getting hot. Different hats, I use them for different reasons. I really don't know why I have more than a couple pair of socks. You know, sometimes it's nice to change socks because your socks get dirt in them, but I don't think that's going to be a problem. And I certainly didn't need to bring more than two pair of socks. So I have my heart rate monitor. In races, sometimes I use a heart rate monitor just to make sure it doesn't get too high the first part of a race. I don't really have it. That's all I'm using it for. I like to keep it like the 140s if I can and not much higher. And if it gets higher, then I know I'm overdoing it. You know, you don't want to overdo it at the beginning. And sometimes it's easy to overdo it because you're fresh at the beginning. I won't be too fresh. I didn't really properly taper for this. I mean, I took it a little bit easy this week, but I didn't do nothing. So this is just a training run. It's not that serious. Let's see, what else do I have? I have baby food. Yes, believe it or not, that's what I have for breakfast is baby food, the type in the pouch. And it's just a blueberry banana mushed up. It tastes good, so I like it. Actually, I brought two packets. I can have one on the course with me. And I've got some these honey stinger waffles and Clif Bar. I'll have something like that for breakfast. I'll only have a few hundred calories. One baby food and a Clif Bar. I really only need to refill the energy in my liver, the calories in the liver and brain, and you don't need a whole lot in the morning. And the rest is just wasted anyway, so I have that. I have a bunch of carbohydrate gels for during the race. And I've got some powdered carbohydrate, stuff called Tailwind. I've got some of that for during the race. And they will have an aid station at the start finish that will come by every 2 miles. So they're going to have some stuff, but it's still good to bring your own just in case. Hopefully they have peanut butter and jelly. That's my favorite thing. I love peanut butter and jelly. I can usually eat that forever and ever and ever and ever, but usually they'll have that and maybe some fruit and some chips and stuff like that. I might have some salty stuff in case you feel like eating something salty. So there you go. That's most of my gear. I got a few other little things, some belts. I do have a water bottle. I may not start with a water bottle because it's only a 2 mile loop, but maybe in that when it gets hot during the day, I may then carry it so I can sip water more often. So maybe at the very beginning and the very end, I may not carry water, but I do have a water bottle on a waist belt that I can carry. And that's about it. I think that's basically all I have to say. So I'm kind of hoping that I get this out during the race sometime when I'm walking, and I will talk while I'm walking. I also have my recorder because when I go to races like this, sometimes I interview other people. But that would be for a full-length podcast. I don't think I would use it for this. I don't know. Maybe I would. If I can, well, I don't know. I don't think I will. I don't know. We're going to see. Do I have anything else? Oh, by the way, I'm running for 12 hours, but there's also a 24-hour race. So I'm starting at 8 a.m. I'm finishing at 8 p.m. Then I have to drive home, so I'll get home really late by the time I get out. But there are people running for a full 24 hours. They will finish at 8 a.m. the next morning. It'd be fun to hang out and watch them or whatever, but I'm not going to stay up all night. And I'm sure someday I will end up doing one of those. But this is my first timed race, and it's only a training run. I don't want to overdo it. If I did the 24-hour, I would need days to kind of recover, and that's not what I want to do right now. I want to keep training after this, so I won't do that. And just the 12-hour. But it'll be cool seeing the 24-hour people also running. Runsmith Enterprises presents Topics in Endurance Sports. This is a Dog Days of Podcasting episode. This is day number 5, Saturday, August 5th. It is about 10 p.m. I'm sitting in a McDonald's parking lot where I just had some super yummy McDonald's. And what follows are two recordings I did earlier. They will only make sense if you listen to yesterday's show. So here they are. Okay, it's about 7:30 in the morning here in Shelbyville, Kentucky at Red Orchard Park. It's surprisingly chilly for this time of year. It's about 50 degrees. And I'm parked at the start of the race. I have my bib. I'm all dressed and ready to go. I just have a short sleeve shirt. So it'll be a little chilly when I start, but it's going to be actually fantastic weather for running. It'll be great. Perfect. It'll be sunny, so I'll need some sunscreen, but other than that, it's going to be amazing weather. So next to me is this guy named Dylan. I saw him last night. He actually camped here overnight, which I had considered doing, but I got my hotel room for free at a Red Roof Inn because my brother-in-law
is a manager for Red Roof Inn, and he got me a free pass. Every now and then, he gets me discounts or free passes. So this guy probably was cold camping. And this guy's like a real professional-looking dude. He's doing the 24-hour run, and he's got a setup with a table, two big coolers, all types of fluids and food. And he set out like 15 of those five-hour energy shots. So I guess he's just going to slam those things all night long or something. Believe it or not, I've never, ever drunk one of those in my life. I don't know why, but I've just never tried one. I probably should. I've never had a Red Bull or anything like that. They do have an aid station here with stuff, but it's smart to bring your own because you don't know what they're going to have. You know, if it's the first time you've done a race at a certain location. So I did stop at a Speedway gas station. I got myself a couple of bottles of Coke, just regular Coke. It's the only time I ever drank regular soda is in a race, just for the sugar. Although I see they do have some Coke here. But, you know, I have my own stash in case they run out. So I also bought some Fritos, just in case I want something salty. And as a treat, I got myself a double-decker oatmeal pie, Little Debbie. Not something I would usually buy, but I thought, what the heck? You know, if I want some fast sugar calories later, I can eat that. Those things are delicious. Let's see, there's only like 50 people doing this race. It's going to be a pretty small race, and I don't know how many are doing 12 hours and how many are doing 24. It looks like they're keeping track in the same sheet. They have like a poster board, and it's a two-mile loop, so this is not chip-timed or anything. They're just going to have someone counting. So I have a bib number. I'm number 171, so every time I come through, they will just add two more miles, so 2, 4, 6, 8. So that's it. I'm hoping that I'll be able to add this recording in with a later recording in Boss Jock. I've not done this before, merge two of them together, but I'm hoping I can put this in the cart and this will work. But anyway, it looks like it's going to be a great race day. Oh, my goals. So last night I didn't want to give any goals. So this is a training run. I'm not going to kill myself necessarily, but I should be able to do 30 miles easy, unless something really goes bad. I would like to get at least 40 miles. That would make it a really, really good training run. I have run 50 miles in 12 hours before, more than once. So theoretically, I should be able to do 50 because this is a really, really, really easy course. There are no hills, there's no rocks, there's no roots. The problem is, mentally, I think this is going to be really weird because there's no real finish line, like I said last night. There's no real driving force to keep moving forward. So I feel like I'm just going to slow down and not push as hard as I normally would if I was running 50 miles. If I'm normally running a 50-mile race, I got to push. I got to kill myself to get to the finish line or I fail. But here, there's going to be no driving force really to do that other than 50 miles is a number. And when you're in a lot of pain, you know, who cares about that number, right? So we'll see what happens. Hopefully at least 30 or 40 miles. And if I feel good, a few more miles. So I'm all lubricated. I lubricated my thighs because don't want any chafing in there. Lubricated my nipples because bloody nipples are not fun. And ready to go in about 20 minutes. Talk to you later. Hey, the time is 11 hours and 1 minute from when I started. And a few minutes ago, I just completed 50 miles. Yay! Mission accomplished. 25 laps, and I've got an hour to go, so I'm just going to walk now. I think I'm just going to walk. So I'm on lap 26, so if it's a little noisy or whatever, it's because I'm walking with my phone. So, yes, I'm in severe pain right now, but let's forget about that. So a few observations during the race. Number one, there was a wedding going on, one of these outdoor weddings at the park. I don't know who thinks it's a good idea to have weddings outdoors. I went to one a few weeks ago and I about boiled in the sun. These people are really lucky because it was about a high of 80 degrees and not super humid, but it's the South in August. Why you would schedule an outdoor wedding is beyond me. Also, the wedding was just about 50 yards off of the course at one point. And runners are known to puke their guts out in races like this because it's easy to have GI issues when you're running this long. It's never happened to me. I don't get GI issues very often, but I've been lucky enough to see someone spill their guts in a race. So I was just thinking, imagining if someone tossed their cookies during the ceremony, which I did run by while the ceremony was going on. That'd be pretty bad. Also, they decided to do the pre-wedding photos of the bride right on the course. So, I mean, this course is part dirt trail, part grass, and some parts they've mowed a path in the grass. The bride was standing right on the mowed path. Like, of all the places, that's the spot you had to do the pictures, so I had to go all the way around it. Not a big deal, but kind of amusing. And then afterwards, the same thing. In fact, the last lap, they were still out there. They were doing pictures forever and ever and ever, so for all I know, they're going to be there again. I'll be there in about another 15 minutes. I'll be back over there. I would think they'd be done because they were there the last two laps. So I did see the bride and groom come up in a horse and buggy. So I said congratulations. Then I felt kind of dumb going through the wedding pictures, but I tried to go around it. But I don't know why they had to pick that spot. It's probably the normal spot. It's our race that's in the way. Also, what else? Number two. I ran this, and I'm still right now, almost completely alone. I mean, I saw people here and there, and of course, got past or passed people. And at the start-finish, there's people recording each lap and all that stuff. But I pretty much alone the whole time, and that's the way I like it. I probably spent 10 minutes running with someone. I do not like to run with people at all. I really dislike it for a few reasons. Number one, I'm socially really awkward, and I don't like trying to make small talk in any situation, but really not when I'm trying to run. I don't like it. It makes me anxious, and I really don't need to be anxious when I'm trying to run. Number two, as you can tell from my breathing, I'm only walking right now, but talking takes energy. When you're trying to run, I don't really need to waste it talking. And number three, this may be the worst thing, I feel compelled to go at their pace. So if they're running, I feel compelled to go at their speed. If they start walking, I feel compelled to, well, not if they start walking, but, you know, if we're walking together, I feel compelled to keep walking with them, even if I want to start running again. So, I mean, I don't. Eventually, I, you know, take off or whatever, but then I feel kind of bad or whatever. Or sometimes people are going a little too fast for me, but they're talking, and I feel like I have to listen. So then I'm running too hard, which is really not good. You know, you wear yourself out doing that. You know, if you're going to be running for hours and hours and hours, you don't want to be busting your nut at hour number two in the race or something. So I have no problems being alone in something like this for the whole time. I don't know how it is with other runners, how many are like me or not. I mean, I do often see people running in groups, and I know for sure some people rather run with people. I wouldn't even want to if it was a friend. I just prefer to be alone. And I don't listen to music or podcasts either. When I train, 100% of the time I listen to podcasts. Always. And I never, ever, ever have in any race. And I've probably done a couple hundred races or whatever. Never once. Now, no real reason. I just don't. So this will be 12 hours of me doing a 2-mile loop 26 times about my own little thoughts in my own little head. And I have no problems with that. I don't get bored. And I've run over 30 hours all pretty much by myself. And I'm okay with that. So I don't know if that's normal or not, but that's me. The third thing is, I mentioned chafing. Well, guess what? I had some chafing. And I hate to say it, but this was in a really bad spot. This was, I'm talking about my Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca. Maybe my Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest. Or maybe more obviously, my Wooly in Free Willy. Yes, it was chafing there in my shorts. And I'm talking about the most sensitive part of it. And this is weird. This happens really rarely, but this isn't the first time. Maybe once a year, once every 2 years, it'll happen. I don't really understand why. Something to do with the exact shorts that I'm wearing. Even though I'm wearing shorts I've worn many, many times. But whichever shorts I'm wearing, the temperature of the day, the humidity, I don't know. It's really weird how it can happen every now and then. And it is not fun, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the good thing about a course like this is every 2 miles, I was running by my car, which was at near the start-finish, and that's like 25, 30 minutes. So the first time I ran by, and this was happening, I threw on another pair of shorts. Remember I said I brought two pairs of shorts? Well, I put on another pair, and that didn't help. Oddly enough, I really thought it would. You know, just the different shorts would do something, but it didn't. So the next time, I got a kit with all types of stuff, you know, like first aid stuff, but lubricants of all sorts for my feet and everything. And I have this stuff that's kind of like Vaseline. It's called Bag Balm. I don't know what the heck it's for. Something to do with horses. And I actually took some of that and put it right on my Wooly. And I did all this, by the way. I changed my shorts, lubricated my Bill Cosby right out in the open. I kind of did get behind a car, but that's the way these races work. People just lose all of their modesty. And you just do things wherever you got to do things. If you have to go to the bathroom, you step off 2 feet off the trail and go. Male or female, doesn't matter. But anyway, that has kind of worked, but I've been re-lubricating every couple of laps, and I'm a little worried when I get home and I take that shower. Oh boy, that may not be fun, but I'm hoping it's not going to be too bad, but it kind of depends on exactly how I'm running. If I'm going uphill, it seems to be a little worse. It's very strange. I don't really get it, but it's just rubbing the wrong way. Let's put it that way. Okay, so I think I'll stop right here and maybe jog a little more. I should get at least 52 miles. They also made a little half-mile loop. So when you get near hour 12, you can just do the half-mile loop a few times and add half-mile segments. So after this loop, you know, that'll be 52. Maybe I can do a couple of half loops if I have time, because it's 11 hours and 10 minutes right now. So, yeah, I should be able to get 53, I think, if I want. I don't really care. I don't give a shiz. I got my 50 miles in. I could just stop right now, but I feel compelled to keep going. So, oh, I had my Little Debbie double-decker oatmeal pie right at 5 p.m., and that was good. Took me about 12 seconds to eat that thing. It was good. In case you're wondering, no, I'm not going to win. I know when I was at mile 38, some other guy was there, and he was at mile 44. It's possible he was in the 24. There's very few people running. I feel like there's only like 20 people. And I don't know which ones are in the 12-hour and which are in the 24. I mean, theoretically, I could win if all the really good people are in the 24. But I'm almost positive that's not the case. I know at least a few guys ahead of me. And probably one of them will be in the 12-hour. And even if I did win because of that, it'd be kind of dorky. When the 24-hour people were going faster than I was even going, which is kind of crazy. But I'm guessing I'll end up like third or fourth place, probably out of like four people. That's what it usually is. So, okay, let me shut up. Talk to you later. Bye. Okay, there you go. I ended up with 54 miles, and hopefully this worked, what I just did with Boss Jock. Hopefully I got all these put together into one recording. We'll find out. But I ended up with 54 miles. I'm really tired. I have a 2.5 hour drive home, and my legs are in pain. So I'm just going to sign off here. I'll have a few more words about this tomorrow. So I'm going to sign off here. This is Run Smith Enterprises. I'm losing it. I'm really tired. I mean, mentally tired. I'm not like going to fall asleep. I'm just, my brain is fried. So whatever this is. Topics in Endurance Sports. Dog Days of Podcasting, number 5. Signing out. Have a great workout. It's Sunday, August 6th, 2017. I'm outside walking with my phone. I discovered this worked yesterday to do this. And so you might hear some background sound, some wind. My car is going by. And I'm just going for a little walk. That's all. A little neighborhood walk. So I've been a complete zombie today, because if you listen to yesterday's episode, you know I did this race and I ran for 12 hours. So as you can imagine, I'm pretty tired. And the biggest problem is anytime I move for that long, the legs, it's hard to describe the pain in the legs. And it's not like screaming pain or anything like that. I'm not going to compare it to having a baby or getting my arm chopped off. But it's extremely deep, way deep down in the muscles. Nothing like I've ever experienced in any other way. And, I mean, I've had this many times. Anytime I do running or biking more than, 6 hours or something. And the problem is, I cannot get comfortable. It's a weird thing whereby I'm constantly twisting and turning to try to get the legs in a better position, but that does no good. It's just, it's what I feel like I want to do, but it makes no difference. So by the time I went to bed last night, it was about, well, I probably got in bed a little after 1, but then I can't just go into bed and sleep really. So I actually probably played on the phone for 45 minutes just trying to get my mind to slow down and stuff. And then I tried to go to bed probably about 2, and I got up at, I didn't get up till like 8:30, but I'm guessing I did not sleep more than 3 or 4 hours, just from all the twisting and turning, and the sleep was horrible quality. So I got up and have done nothing all day. Been a complete zombie. I did take a nap from, I actually napped from about 1:30 to 3:30. Not really the whole time, but it was almost a 2-hour nap. And that, my legs feel much better now as far as that goes. I can nap. I'll be able to sleep tonight, I think. So going for a walk is a really good idea. I was thinking about doing a bike ride, but time just got away from me. So going for a walk is great recovery, getting some blood through the muscles, and this will count as my workout for the day, if you want to call it that. So I'm in Sunset Park, which is 2 blocks from my house. So very famous. It's not famous at all. No one in the world has heard of it except us here, because this is where Jerry Lucas grew up in this area and used to play basketball here. So if you're an old time guy like me, you know Jerry Lucas, famous NBA player. Actually, I think he played in the Olympics as well. And then he played for the, oh boy, I'm feeling like an idiot. Did he play for the Celtics? I don't know. All of a sudden I'm embarrassed. I feel like he played for the Celtics. I could be wrong. But anyway, he was a pro basketball player for many years. Is he in the Hall of Fame? I should know that too, but I'm not positive. That's pretty stupid. But I remember him as a kid. I remember watching him play. Great basketball player. And actually, they had a little ceremony here like last summer. It was, I don't know what it was, but it was a bunch of old time athletes who went to Middletown High School here. There's only one high school. And they came and talked, and Jerry Lucas was one of them. And he talked for a bit. You know, they were reminiscing. These are all the really old guys, even older than me, reminiscing about the good old days. And I got my picture taken with Jerry Lucas. That was pretty cool. Let's see, as about as far as just to wrap up the race. By the way, the name of the race is called the Run for Dreams. And I interviewed the race director after the race. Really nice guy, but I will save that for a full episode. It won't be a dog days. The interview with him. So it's an organization that does wish things for kids. You know, when kids that are chronically ill, terminally ill or whatever, it grants their wishes. And sounds like a really great organization. He works for them, and the race was, you know, a fundraiser for that. And, you know, it's really too bad. And Tommy, if you're listening to this, maybe we can drum up some more support, that only, you know, 20, 30 people did this. This course could hold 100 people easily. It's a fantastic cause, fantastic race. And I'd like to see some more support for it. I mean, it's only the fourth year of it, so it's still just getting going, but there's no reason he couldn't get 100 people there. And that would really be something. That would really raise a lot more money. So that would be nice. But I don't know. I'll have to get some more advertising going, I think. Really push that race, because I think more people could do it. It's really, really great for a training race like what I did. And I think others are doing it in that way as well. By the way, I think I kept saying how flat it was. I tell you, every lap, the hills got bigger and bigger and bigger, to the point where after about 10 laps, it did not feel flat at all. So I'll have to look at my watch recorded all the information, like how far I went and how long it took me, but also records elevation data, how much up and down I did, although it's not perfectly accurate, but kind of curious to look at that. Oh, I got a couple of doggies here. Hi, guys. So I'll have to look at that and see if what the elevation gain. But it's funny because everybody was saying the same thing, that the hills just felt like they're getting bigger and bigger. And this is not new to this race. Anyone who does looped trail races has experienced this phenomenon before. I have, where each loop it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I've never done 26 loops. I got another doggy. He's on the porch. He's very cute. He's standing on his hind legs with his little paws on the railing. But, yeah, I've done the most loops I've ever done in a race before was 6. Like, you just had to do 6 loops to finish the race. And in those two, each loop, the hills grow and they get larger and larger. So the very first loop, I ran the whole thing. And that's where I actually was running with someone, and I felt compelled to go at her pace. She was kicking my butt. And that was the only loop I did the whole thing. After that, I was walking the really tiny, sharp hills. And then each loop, well, I probably did 15 loops about the same, where I ran most of it, you know, like 85%. Then after about 15 loops, I started walking more and more. These little tiny, I mean, it can be like a 1% grade or 2% grade for 50 meters. And it starts to feel like, holy moly, this is a hill. So you start walking up it. It's pretty funny. But a lot of trail runners understand this. Had another interest. Oh, by the way, I ended up with 54 miles. I got second place. As far as I know, there were only 2 of us. Now, there may have been more, because the way the rules work is it's just how far you run between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. So not everyone had to start at 8 a.m. You could start at 10 a.m. if you want, and you could finish at 5 p.m. So I don't really know yet how many people did the 12 mile, how many guys did it. I'll find out when the results are posted in a couple days, but I don't know.
But there were two guys who finished right at 12 hours, me and another guy, and he got 56.5 miles, which was a course record, by the way. I got 54, so I was really happy with that. And what else? We got a couple of kids on bikes. They're going to be looking at me funny because I'm talking. Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
What was I saying? I forget. Oh, anyway, I don't know how many other people were in the race. Could have been a decent number more. One interesting thing was there was this guy, very interesting character. So on Friday night when I got there was this big tent, like the awning type tent that you put up with four corners with a big top on it, and it even had all four sides put in. So I thought that was the aid station Friday night. Turns out it wasn't. It was one of the competitors. So when I got there Friday and eventually realized that, I thought, well, okay, I'm going to be in a busier street now. We got cars going by. So I thought it was someone doing the 24-hour race, and it's a place for him to crash, which was true. But it turned out this guy evidently didn't even put this thing up himself. He had a professional someone come. Okay, I'm at a bad spot right now. I got dogs, I got cars. Hope you can hear me. So he had someone put this up for him. He drove all the way from New York to do this race. So evidently he wants to do 50 miles in all 50 states is the story. I'm finding all this out after I finish the race. But he walked the whole thing. No running, just walking, which is cool. He's not the only person to do that. But he was a little interesting from the very beginning. He had earphones on, so when I passed him, I'd just go by him, and then I kind of raised my hand in a little wave because, you know, he's got earphones, so I wasn't going to say anything. So I just give a little wave. I'm going to turn off to a street that's not so busy. I just give a little wave, you know, like a little hello, and he would yell, okay, 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 good, good, good. It's really strange, and he did that like three times when I passed him. So I'm like, what the heck? But then it turned out, evidently, he kind of lost his mind a little bit. I found out that so I'm done. I just finished the race. I'm hanging out there. And evidently, the lap before, he had come in and didn't know what was going on. So I guess he kept asking how far he had run. He was asking over and over. Then someone asked what state he was in. He didn't know. Someone asked who the president was. He didn't know. You know, maybe that's a good thing not to know. Or if you are of the other persuasion, it might have been good not to know that Obama was president. Whatever your thoughts are on that. But I guess he didn't know what's going on. And they tried to get him to stop, and he wouldn't stop. So another competitor, his wife is like an EMT, and she walked with him. What an angel. I mean, what a wonderful person. She walked a whole lap with him. And I saw him come back in, and someone said to him, hey, are you doing okay? And I don't know what he said, but she was behind him just shaking her head no. Evidently, he was not in good shape. But there happened to be a police officer there who was related to someone with the race. So he checked the guy out, and then they called an ambulance, and an ambulance came, and I guess they did a check right there. His glucose levels were way low, and that makes sense because if your glucose levels go low, you have a brain fog because your brain sucks up tons of glucose. So I guess that was the problem. So poor guy. So I guess they were just having him, you know, drink some Coke or something. I'm not quite sure. So I don't know if he continued or not because theoretically he had another 11 hours. He could have kept going after I left. But hopefully he's all right. But just an interesting guy from the very beginning. And driving all the way from New York to Kentucky to do this race all by himself. I don't know. Something different. He was an older guy, older than me. But that's about all I have for today, I think.